Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Saturday, March 14th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Coronavirus. City, MMH, MCS officials provide virus updates, by J.C. Lewis. Officials from Midland Memorial Hospital, the City of Midland, and Midland Christian School provided updates on the coronavirus situation Friday during a press conference at the hospital chapel. MCS students and adult sponsors are returning today from a non-school trip to Spain. Chancellor Eddie Lee read a statement from Superintendent Jared Lee. MCS already announced spring break would be extended a week. The 48 students and 26 sponsors, some employed by the school, began planning the trip about a year ago, Lee said. The lead sponsor worked with the travel agency World Strides and was in close communication with the agency in the weeks leading up to the trip. It was recommended that the group travel as planned because Spain wasn't under a CDC or World Health Organization travel advisory. Throughout the trip, World Strides has gone above and beyond to protect our students and families, Lee read from the statement. Instructing them in good hygiene practices and closely monitoring their health and well-being. One of the adults on the trip is a registered nurse and helped with additional monitoring of all participants' health and hygiene practices. It is my understanding that all trip participants will go through a health screening through DFW International Airport, Lee's statement said. All trip participants are required to self-quarantine for 14 days out of an abundance of caution, regardless of health screening results, Lee said. Currently, the screenings will be happening at the airports that lead into Midland's airport, said Whitney Craig, with Midland Health and Senior Services. There are currently 11 airports across the U.S. that do screening from international travel. Craig then talked about self-isolation regarding travel to where COVID-19 is prevalent. Self-isolation in tandem with hand-washing and making sure you aren't touching your face, Craig said. Making sure you stay home when you're sick and making sure that you avoid people who are sick will help us curb any type of spread of COVID-19 in the area. Val Sparks, infection preventionist for Midland Health, said self-isolation pertains to those who have traveled to Level 3 countries according to CDC guidelines. The countries with Level 3 warnings include all of Europe, except the United Kingdom, China, Iran, and South Korea. Symptoms of COVID-19 are very familiar to you. They come almost the same as the flu, including having a fever, Sparks said. It is a lower respiratory illness, so usually it is a cough and could lead to shortness of breath, especially in those individuals that are at higher risk of pulmonary disease or have underlying conditions. COVID-19 testing is available at Midland Health. It is not done on site, and it isn't done on everyone, Sparks said. They are following guidelines of the CDC and Texas Department of State Health Services for what they call persons under investigation, or PUIs. They only become a person under investigation after all of the criteria has been met and other underlying illnesses have been ruled out, Sparks said. The clinical features include fever, signs or symptoms of lower respiratory illness, cough or shortness of breath, history of travel from affected geographical areas, and individuals with risk factors that put them at higher risk of poor outcomes, Sparks said. In addition, we have to screen out all the seasonal respiratory diseases, such as flu, seasonal coronavirus, rhinovirus, adenoviruses, etc., and that is done through a nasopharyngeal swab on a respiratory panel, she said. That is the rule out. If anything is positive on that test, then patients don't have the new COVID-19. If all of that is negative and patients meet other criteria, then patients would meet criteria for additional testing. The same nasopharyngeal swab can be used and sent to an outside lab for testing. The reference lab is open 7 days a week, but it takes 24 to 48 hours to get the results back, Sparks said. Individuals who aren't ill enough to be hospitalized, which 80% are not, are told to go home with instructions from the health department and self-isolate, she said. If individuals need further health care, they would be admitted to Midland Memorial Hospital. There were no positive coronavirus cases in Midland County as of Friday, Sparks said. Mayor Patrick Payton was out of town until Friday night, said Spencer Robnett, at-large council member and mayor pro tem. Between the global outbreak of COVID-19 and the unprecedented collapse of oil prices and the financial markets, it has been a difficult week. And a historically difficult week for the city of Midland and everyone in this room, Robnett said. Robnett said that Midland is still a town where people look out for each other. We will make it through these difficult times by exemplifying the best traits of what it means to be a Midlander, Robnett said. Neighbors look out for neighbors, and it's a town that will show its best side through the most difficult times. Robnett said that the mayor and city council are committed to working with all the local, state, and national partners to keep Midland prepared and safe in the face of coronavirus. This article is entitled Judicial Legal Limbo. Municipal and District Courts Postpone Proceedings, from Staff Reports. Midland County Judiciary and Midland County Court are postponing certain proceedings until April 3rd in response to the coronavirus situation. The Midland County Judiciary has suspended jury trials, non-essential proceedings, and all proceedings involving large groups of people. This action is in compliance with guidelines set out by the Texas Office of Court Administration, said Judge Elizabeth Leonard of the 238th District Court. Anyone with questions on the status of their case should contact the court's coordinator, she said. The municipal court is rescheduling all defendants, jurors, and witnesses set for a hearing or a trial from Monday through April 3rd as a result of the coronavirus situation. The court will remain open to the public to handle court-related matters. If someone is sick, they should use the following options to address their citation, witness notice, or jury service without entering the court facility. Review the options you have on the back of the paper citation, instruction sheet on the electronic citation, jury postcard, and our city website, https://www.midland-texas.gov/184/municipal court. In many instances, you can address your citation online or through the mail and not have to appear in person. Options to handle your citation online can be found through this portal, www.municipalonlinepayments.com/MidlandTX. Options to handle your citation by mail to this address, P.O. Box 1152, Midland, Texas, 79702. For questions regarding your citation, contact 685-7314. For questions regarding jury service and trial settings, contact 685-7300. This article is entitled MISD, Classes to Resume Monday, Other Activities Canceled, from Staff Reports. Classes at all Midland ISD campuses are scheduled to resume on Monday, according to a press release from the Communications Department. MISD is in regular communications with our state and local health officials, and we are following their guidance as we move forward. As of Friday afternoon, neither Midland nor Ector counties have reported any cases of patients infected with COVID-19, the statement read. But some preventative measures will be taken until further notice. All competitions, concerts, and performances have been canceled. Practices, however, will continue as scheduled. The University Interscholastic League announced Friday afternoon that all athletic competitions have been suspended through the end of March. all non-essential meetings, including PTA, have been canceled. Only essential personnel are allowed on campuses. All district-related travel has been suspended, both in-state and out-of-state. All community meetings scheduled for the week of March 16th are postponed. The district notified parents and staff members of current steps and directs them to follow CDC guidance, according to the release. Go to MISD's website, www.midlandisd.net, and Facebook page, www.facebook.com/MidlandISD, for updated information. This article is entitled, "Some Area Schools Extend Spring Break," from Staff Reports. While Midland ISD and Ector ISD are returning to class on Monday, other schools are not. Schools that have extended their respective spring breaks include Midland College, Midland Christian School, Trinity School, and the University of Texas Permian Basin. At Trinity, remote learning for students in preschool through 12th grade will begin March 23rd, according to an email from the school's director of marketing. Hillcrest School had stated that it would be in session unless MISD closes, then we will close as well. Hillcrest officials did state that attendance of a student at school will be under the discretion of the parent. St. Anne's Catholic School will extend spring break for another week. All extracurricular and school-sponsored activities will be canceled as well. Classes will resume March 23rd. Greenwood ISD announced Friday night that classes will resume Wednesday. Monday and Tuesday will be work days for teachers to plan and prepare should the district need to offer instruction online or by alternative methods, according to an email from the superintendent. This will also give GISD administration an opportunity to identify and communicate with staff and families who have traveled to areas where the coronavirus has been identified, he said. This article is entitled, "Crude Prices Suffer Worst Week Since 2008. Rig Counts Are Steady," from Staff Reports. Oil prices suffered their biggest weekly plunge since 2008, beginning with Monday's $10 drop. Price woes already exacerbated by decreased demand caused by the coronavirus were intensified by the unexpected price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia as the two countries and other major producing nations prepared to flood the market with more oil. Prices suffered a loss of 23% this week, but received a bit of a boost Friday when President Trump announced plans to fill the nation's strategic petroleum reserve. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange added 23 cents to close the week at $31.73, up from Monday's close of $31.13 per barrel. The posted price ended the week at $28.25, up from Friday's $27.75 per barrel. Natural gas prices ended the week higher, helped by a 16-cent jump Tuesday. Prices on the NYMEX added almost 3 cents Friday to close at $1.86 per MCF, up from $1.77 on Monday. Rig counts are steady. Rig counts held steady this week, according to oilfield services company Baker Hughes. The U.S. rig count lost one rig to 792 and remains at a three-year low. Texas added four rigs to 408, while the Permian Basin added three rigs, bringing its total to 418. Texas accounts for about half the nation's active drilling rigs, and the Permian Basin 60% of all oil drilling activity. New Mexico, the only other producing state with a triple-digit rig count, added one rig to 117. Eddy County, New Mexico, remained the most active county in the Permian with 58 rigs, up one from the previous week. Lee County, New Mexico, followed with 57 rigs, unchanged from last week. Midland remained third most active, dropping two rigs to 46. Martin and Reeves counties followed with 41 rigs each, up one for Martin and up two for Reeves. Loving County added two rigs for 35, and Howard County added a rig for 32 rigs at work within county lines. Ward County dropped a rig for 20. Upton County added a rig for 15 rigs, and Culberson County lost a rig for 13. Glasscock and Reagan counties each had 11 rigs, with Glasscock dropping a rig and Reagan unchanged for the week. This is the obituary column, Saturday, March 14th, 2020. Daniel Lauren Friday. Daniel Lauren Friday died on March 11, 2020, after a long struggle with multiple sclerosis. Dan was born on October 27, 1956, at Midland Memorial Hospital to parents George Daniel Friday and Melba Jeannie Lucas Friday. Dan is survived by his daughter Morgan Diane McLean, her husband John Michael McLean, two grandchildren, Victoria and Jonathan, wives Marcella and Jan, father George, siblings Randy, Pam, Lance, Ellen, Kayla, seven nieces and nephews, and 10 grandnieces and nephews. Memorial services for family and friends will be held this summer, where Dan requested his ashes will be carried down the trail by family and friends from Needles, Colorado to Durango, Colorado, then will be laid to rest in the Colorado Mountains. Instead of flowers, please send memorials to Hospice of Midland, who eased Dan's final journey with fidelity and compassion. Edwin C. Woodruff. Edwin C. Woodruff passed away on March 9, 2020, in Austin. He was 93 years old. Ed was born in Manhattan to George and Margaret Woodruff on July 22, 1926. He had one brother, George, 2 years his senior. Ed is survived by his family, his wife Mary McCree Trapp Woodruff, daughter Betsy Randall, husband Gardner, from his marriage to Barbara Brown Woodruff, and two grandsons. He is fondly remembered by Mary's family, children Mark McCree Trapp and Georgia Noland, husband Patrick, and three grandchildren. The family will hold a private service at Episcopal Church of the Epiphany, Richardson, Texas, on Saturday, March 28, 2020. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be sent to Episcopal Church of the Epiphany or online. Mildred Witt Moore. Mildred Witt Moore, 91, of Lubbock, Texas, died March 11, 2020. Known to her friends and family as Mimi, she was born on November 6, 1928, in Robstown, Texas, to Bert and Ann Midkiff Brinson. She was raised by her maternal grandparents, T.O. and Lily Midkiff, in Midland, Texas. Mimi is preceded in death by her husband, Burl Moore, and is survived by her three children, Linda Witt Kakos and husband George of Dallas, Texas, Larry Witt and wife Jane of Lubbock, and Lynn Witt Hensley and husband Homer Hensley III of Lubbock, and five grandchildren. The family is holding a private service on Saturday, March 14, 2020. Joe Russell Hollinshead. Joe Russell Hollinshead, 74, of Gardendale, passed away on March 13, 2020, in Odessa, Texas. A memorial service will be held on Monday, March 16, 2020, at 11:30 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland, Texas. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Norbert Dickman. Norbert Dickman, 77, of Midland, passed away peacefully surrounded by loved ones Wednesday, March 11, 2020. A visitation and rosary will be held Monday, March 16, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home Chapel, with a rosary recited at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland, Texas, on Tuesday, March 17, at 10 a.m. This article is entitled, Wagner Noel Cancels All Events Through Mid-May, from Staff Reports. All events at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center have been canceled through mid-May, according to a press release from the University of Texas Permian Basin, which owns the facility. The decision to postpone upcoming events at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center was not taken lightly. The health and safety of our patrons, performers, and staff is important to us, said Stephanie Rivas, general manager. We are hopeful that we can work with promoters and agents to find future dates for all of the events that are affected. Ticket holders for canceled events should hold on to their tickets until new dates have been announced. Once a new date is announced, they will receive an email with information and possible refund opportunities according to the release. For specific questions regarding the coronavirus and upcoming performances, email info@wagnernoel.com. For a full list of events that will be postponed, visit www.wagnernoel.com. This article is entitled Church Services, Shotguns and Stilettos Among Events Canceled, from Staff Reports. The following events are a few that have been canceled because of coronavirus. At least three churches have canceled Sunday services at the recommendation of Midland Mayor Patrick Payton. First Baptist Church has canceled its services, Pastor Darren Wood said in an email. Pastor Charles Deira said First Presbyterian Church has canceled its services, but will stream the 11 a.m. service at fpcmid.org. Stonegate Fellowship services will be online, according to a post on the church's Facebook page. Also, child care and other activities are suspended through March 20th. Senior Life Midland will be postponing all public gatherings, trainings, information sessions, including the March for Meals Senior Awareness event that had been planned for March 28th, according to a press release. Also, the Southeast Senior Center and Midland Senior Center will be closed Monday through March 27th, and Foster Grandparents Program volunteers will not report for duty Monday through March 27th. For any questions, call Tracy Renton or Kathleen Kerwin Haney at 689-6693. Junior League of Midland is postponing Shotguns and Stilettos, three events that were planned for next weekend. The new date has not yet been determined. The West Texas Food Bank has canceled the Forever Full Margarita Fiesta that was scheduled for March 28th. There are no plans to reschedule, according to the Facebook post by the food bank. The Ellen Noel Art Museum will be closed to the public today through March 22nd, and programs will be canceled in response to CDC recommendations regarding prevention of the spread of the coronavirus, according to a release from the museum. In addition, three additional events have been canceled because expected participation exceeds recommended limits: the Community Art Day on April 4th, exhibition closing receptions for ECISD schools on April 16th and April 30th. The University of Texas at Austin's McDonnell Observatory announced that its visitor center will close at 5 p.m. Friday and will remain closed through April 19th. All public programs are also canceled, according to an email from the observatory. This article is entitled Texas Declares Disaster, UT President's Wife Tests Positive, by Paul J. Weber, Associated Press. Austin. Texas's governor declared a state of disaster Friday as the coronavirus pandemic spread to every major city and swept new worries through the 50,000-student campus at the University of Texas, which abruptly canceled classes after the wife of the school president tested positive. University of Texas President Greg Fenves said another member of his family is also believed to have COVID-19, the disease caused by the virus, and that he had also been tested. He said his wife Carmel started feeling ill following a trip to New York last week and that his family was in self-quarantine. The announcement by Fenves came hours after the university, one of the largest in the U.S., canceled classes and closed the campus, which previously had no confirmed cases. Texas now has at least 39 confirmed cases of the virus, and Republican Governor Greg Abbott said 220 people had been tested as of Friday. Questions have mounted about why so few tests had been done in a state of 29 million people. But Abbott said at a news conference that testing would begin ramping up, including San Antonio launching drive-through testing for first responders and certain high-risk patients. Abbott, who, unlike governors in other big states, has not urged cities to limit large gatherings or cancel events, also ordered visitor restrictions on everywhere from nursing homes to jails, and he sought to calm nerves by noting that 90 people previously brought to Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio from Wuhan, China, which had been the epicenter of the virus, had now all returned home. "This is not a death sentence we're dealing with," Abbott said. "This is a typical outcome that we expect to see. Working together, I know we can do it." The coronavirus that causes COVID-19 was declared a pandemic by the World Health Organization on Wednesday. Worldwide, more than 137,400 cases have been confirmed, and more than 5,000 people have died. The vast majority of people recover within weeks. It causes only mild or moderate symptoms for most people, but can cause more severe illness, including pneumonia for some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems. On Friday, San Antonio banned large public gatherings and postponed its giant fiesta celebration until November, after the first travel-related case of COVID-19 was detected in the city. Like the South by Southwest Festival in Austin that was shelved last week, it was another big blow for a major Texas city. Fiesta organizers say the festival attracts more than 2 million people and has an economic impact of more than $300 million. Dallas Mayor Eric Johnson issued a proclamation late Thursday declaring a local state of disaster for the city of 1.3 million people, shortly after a countywide ban on large gatherings of 500 or more people was announced. Public health officials in Austin, meanwhile, said that one patient in his 60s was hospitalized in critical condition. Austin Mayor Steve Adler said the city had been preparing for the virus to arrive and had taken preemptive steps to reduce the threat of its spreading, including canceling schools Friday ahead of next week's spring break. "This is a virus that we have known was coming to us. It has now come to us," Adler said. "Let's be calm and deal with what's in front of us." This is the Dear Abby column. Objection to dress code threatens to sink cruise. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married 30 years. I recently retired, and we are planning a cruise to Europe and a two-month stay, returning on the same cruise line. The cruise line is rather posh, and travelers are asked to, quote, dress appropriately, unquote, which means essentially men should wear a jacket to dinner, no tie required. My husband is balking at the idea he should have to wear a jacket on his vacation and now says he won't go. Abby, we have already invested several $100s in deposits, so what do I do? I'd rather not spend 14 days at sea with a husband whining over wearing a jacket for 30 minutes a day and end up dining alone. We reserved a table for two so we wouldn't be stuck making small talk. We are cruising because he will not fly. Signed, Texas Wife. Dear Texas Wife, you have already accommodated your husband by booking a cruise instead of flying. Could his problem be that his jackets no longer fit him? If that's the case, buy him one that does. However, if his objection is that he really doesn't want to go, why not take your husband up on his offer to stay home and ask one of your girlfriends to accompany you? Then all three of you might have a better time. Dear Abby, I am 61 and dating a 63-year-old man, Charles. I live in my own apartment, pay my own bills, and I like and enjoy life. Charles is constantly over at my apartment and ends up falling asleep for hours at a time. It irritates me when he sleeps 6, 7, and even 8 hours at my place. I feel he has a place of his own, and he should be doing that there. He has told me numerous times that he doesn't feel safe at his apartment because of the neighborhood. He says that is why he is spending time with me. I like my alone time, which I don't have often. Before him, I wasn't even in a relationship for 7 years. I feel that Charles is needy. Am I being unreasonable? I don't think I am, and it always ends up in an argument. If you could please give me some advice, I would appreciate your input. Signed, Not Hotel Accommodations. Dear Not Hotel, wake up and smell the coffee. Charles told you he spends all that time with you because he doesn't feel safe in his apartment, not because he loves your company so much he cannot stay away. What did he do before he met you? From where I sit, it appears he's angling to move in. It wasn't unreasonable to want your own space, particularly if you're the one paying for it, while he snores away the hours. If the status quo isn't what you want, it is up to you to change it. Dear Abby, in class I sit next to a girl who is constantly telling me that she likes the way I smell. I don't know if she's flirting with me or actually likes my cologne. She is making me very self-conscious. Should I confront her or tell my teacher? Or should I drop out and move to Alaska? I'm scared. Signed, Ready to Move in the South. Dear Ready to Move, your classmate is trying to pay you a compliment. Tell her the name of your cologne and where she can buy some if you are wearing any. As to moving out of state, that smells very unnecessary to me. Hi, this is Dave, and I'm reading from the Odessa American, Saturday, March 14th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Turnaround Plans Focus on Improving Math, by Ruth Campbell. With approval from the Texas Education Agency, turnaround plans for Bowie, Crockett, and Wilson and Young Middle Schools and Burnett Elementary will be implemented next year. Executive Director for Leadership, Dahlia Benavides, said only campuses that have received F ratings from TEA for the past 2 years must have turnaround plans. The plans have been written to be implemented by each campus for the next 3 years if they are unable to earn the state's MET standard designation. We have all of our schools that are not doing well had to have a targeted improvement plan, but only the F schools for the second year have to do a turnaround plan. The targeted improvement plans have been implemented, but not the turnaround plans. Those aren't implemented until next year, Benavides said. Ector County Independent School District has 16 failing campuses out of 43. Benavides said these are original turnaround plans as opposed to revised. But in creating those plans, we had to submit them to TEA, and TEA gave us some feedback to make some changes to them before they went to the board, Benavides said. The targeted improvement plans were submitted in September, and those are on a one-year cycle, she said. Alicia Press, an executive director for leadership, said there are similarities between the targeted improvement plans and the turnaround plans. The schools with turnaround plans have targeted improvement plans as well. Annette Macias, executive director of accountability, said the targeted improvement plans are specific and the turnaround plans are more broad. Officials said the campuses with turnaround plans can start laying the groundwork before they have to implement them. Some of the work has already started. As part of the TIP plan, they've already started some of those, and some of that work is going to continue into the turnaround plan. Bonham, Bowie, and Wilson and Young are using Teach2One to provide individualized learning for math. Bowie and Wilson and Young received Math Innovation Zone grants for the program, Macias said. Teach2One is considered part of the innovation. It's new and different, radically different than what we've done before, Benavides said. Bowie and Wilson and Young are still subject to accountability, and students are still going to take the STAR test. It's just the intervention that they're required to do. We're still waiting to hear from the state on if they're going to have to implement those, Macias said. Macias said Teach2One is currently being implemented in sixth grade, so with the MIZ grant, they'll be funded to implement it in 7th and 8th grade. Reading and math are the weak points at the schools. Benavides acknowledged that the schools are doing better in math than reading. We don't have any innovation programs for reading, other than we've just got to get our kids to read more and read often and comprehend better. Math offers us more solutions at this point, Benavidez said. The data shared at a recent ECISD Board of Trustees meeting was based on short-cycle assessments. It wasn't a full-length test that is really comparable to the STAR. It's just short chunks of the standards, every 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes a little bit longer. While on those short-cycle assessments, campuses are doing better, it's usually when they take that summative assessment that we don't necessarily see the growth that we're seeing in the smaller tests, Macias said. Summative, a test that you give at the end of a course or at the end of the year that assess the skills that were taught throughout the year. Formative testing assesses students on a short-term basis. It could be a short test at the end of the week or the same day. Summative tests are given toward the end of the year to see where students are and see if they have retained what they've learned. Teach to One has been in place since the beginning of the year. There have been reports that the program is ineffective. Macias said it's not showing the gains people thought it would. I think the research is kind of mixed, and only because so much of it depends on the implementation, on whether each entity implements it the way they're supposed to. So just like anything, you can do research and find a little bit of both. Some that it does work, some that it doesn't, Benavidez said. They've told us from the very beginning when we started using the program that there will be what they call an implementation dip, Benavidez said. In other words, any time you start something new and teachers are learning how to do that process, sometimes you'll see that the scores go down just a little. It's a dip before they see the program being run like it's supposed to be run. So we're expecting an implementation dip, but we'll see. We're still not sure how that's going to pan out. That's one of the reasons why the state has done the Math Innovation Zone, to let us know that it's okay that we're trying something new. This year, Benavidez said, Teach to One was put in place in 6th grade. Next year, ECISD is considering 7th grade, and then she believes 8th grade. We've got to give it some time before we can make a determination whether or not it's going to work for us. So I think we're committed to the implementation of it over time, Benavidez said. That's a decision that has to be made once we see a trend in data over time, and it is just going to take a while before we get to that point of whether or not those decisions need to be made. With reading, Benavidez said the district is using what it has at its disposal. We don't have any special programs for that at this point in time, so we're just continuing to make sure that we're teaching the standards that the state has given us, she added. Benavidez said one place the district will see a difference in reading and math is the data-driven instruction process during professional learning communities where teachers collaborate with their peers at the same grade level. That's a process where teachers are able to really begin to understand the standards for reading. The better they understand the standards, the better they will be able to put lessons together and to address the needs of the students, Benavidez said. Macias said there are new state standards for reading that are being implemented this year. They're not necessarily going to test the new standards this year yet, but we have to start teaching them. Then next year they're going to combine the reading and the writing together, so we won't have a reading and a writing test separately that we've had in the past. We're going through transition with language arts and the standards, Macias said. Benavidez said there is a new reading adoption this year, and they are looking at implementing at certain campuses leveled literacy intervention kits, where teachers will be able to meet the needs of students at the small group level. We're trying to definitely increase the amount of reading kids do and self-selected reading, because I think that's really important for kids to self-select and read the things that they enjoy reading, Benavidez said. The turnaround plans were submitted to TEA March 2nd. Macias said the agency will review them, and if they feel adjustments are needed, they'll essentially reject the plan and send it back with suggestions. Macias said they will work on the plan and resubmit it this summer when they will get the final approval or rejection from the state. Benavidez said TEA has made revisions on how the district has created the plans even from last year. It seems like every year we learn the process of creating these plans, and then TEA changes it again, and then we have to relearn either a different process or a different part, Benavidez said. It's just ever-evolving. This article is entitled ECISD Ready to Open Doors. No confirmed cases, people are being monitored. By Royal McGregor and Michael Merlo. On Friday afternoon, members of the newly formed Coronavirus Task Force addressed members of the public and media about growing concerns inside the city of Odessa and Ector County. Ector County Independent School District Superintendent Scott Murray said during the meeting at City Hall that all schools will be open on Monday. Murray explained there hasn't been a confirmed case of coronavirus in Ector County as of Friday afternoon, but he understands those plans can turn in hours. The decision continues to be hourly as new information comes available, Murray said, after the Coronavirus Task Force press conference. This entire coronavirus is new to our world, and we have to make a decision based on the latest information that we have. It could be a different decision on Saturday. It could be a different decision on Sunday. Based on what we know Friday, this is the best thing to do for our kids in our community. During the press conference, Murray said all non-essential travel for staff and students is canceled or postponed until further notice. He explained that includes athletics, fine arts, academics contests, and conferences. Murray also said all non-essential gatherings, which includes PTA meetings, booster club meetings, and community meetings, are canceled or postponed until further notice. Murray said that all non-essential visitors or guests will be restricted from visiting campuses until further notice. Murray said he's encouraged all students and staff to stay home if they are sick. Murray told the Odessa American after the meeting that any student or staff member that traveled for spring break should go through the CDC checklist for places that have positive tests or people that have been exposed to the coronavirus. As a school system, we would be giving the same guidance as the CDC is giving to all Americans right now, Murray said. We are also encouraging any student or staff member that shows any symptoms, cough, congestion, or those kinds of situations, we want those people to stay at home. We don't want sickness in our schools. Ector County Health Department epidemiologist Amrinder S. Shahal fielded questions from the media that there are people in Ector County who are being monitored for the coronavirus, but he wouldn't give an exact number. He said the only number he will disclose is confirmed cases. Shahal said during the press conference that due to no confirmed coronavirus cases in Ector County, that risk to residents remains low. He said that all tests received by the Ector County Health Department are sent to the public health lab in Lubbock. Shahal said if a test comes back positive, it will be marked as presumptive positive and would be sent to the CDC to confirm the result. Shahal explained the turnaround for when the test is sent to Lubbock and a result is made can be around 24 to 48 hours. Shahal said turnaround time is pretty good as he compared it to Houston residents who can wait between 3, 4, and 5 days for results. 24 to 48 hours is the timeline right now, but that can change with the volume of tests, Shahal said. In addition to the Ector County Health Department sending tests, Shahal said physicians can also order tests from LabCorp and Quest Diagnostics. Shahal explained physicians would have to go through those channels individually. Ector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia said if a person doesn't have a health care provider, that they can call the emergency room. During the conference, Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes talked about the coronavirus and nursing homes. Those that are in our nursing homes are the most vulnerable, she said. We are asking our nursing homes to please go through the CDC questionnaire, which they are. They are also taking temperatures of those that are coming in to see their mom or dad or loved one. We would just ask the public to be compliant with that because it's not only for your mom or your dad or your grandma's protection, it is for your protection as well. Nursing homes in Odessa are using precautions and some aren't allowing visitors at all. A representative from Orchard Park of Permian Basin said the assisted living facility is taking multiple precautions, which includes taking visitors' temperature, limiting visitors to one resident, and limiting visiting hours as well. Lincoln Tower said over the phone, the independent living facility is allowing visitors after they passed screenings, while Sienna Nursing and Rehabilitation isn't allowing any visitors. Ector County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Sergeant Gary Dusler stated in an email on Friday afternoon that a command from the Texas Commission on Jail Standards was issued about suspending visits to inmates in the Ector County Law Enforcement Center until further notice. The suspension is reportedly in effect until terminated by the governor or until the disaster declaration is lifted or expires. Salvation Army Captain Juan Gomez said that if they see someone is sick, some of the volunteers will drive them to the hospital. Gomez said the Salvation Army is being extra cautious in regards to the situation. "We have protocols in place for these types of things," Gomez said. He said the staff and volunteers continue to provide transportation to shelter guests on a regular basis, but that could change depending on how many staff and volunteers they have. Gomez said, with the lack of certain hygiene materials at stores, it makes it hard for them to get things like toilet paper, soap, and hand sanitizer, especially as a nonprofit organization. In a press conference that took place in Austin, Governor Greg Abbott declared a state of disaster in all Texas counties. The state of disaster would allow Abbott to authorize the use of all available and necessary state government resources to help manage this situation. Activating the State Emergency Management Plan and the State Operations Center to enhance the state's planning and response capabilities, giving TDEM the ability to reassign and fully utilize appropriate personnel where they are needed most, providing the immediate ability to move resources around the state, including resources obtained through the Strategic National Stockpile, and empowering the Office of the Texas Attorney General to pursue cases of price gouging and ensure that offenders are prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. The Associated Press reported President Donald Trump declared the coronavirus as a national emergency, which would allow him to free up more money and resources. This is this column called Quick Hits. Benefit. The Eagles Lodge, 1344 East 7th Street, has scheduled a benefit for Hamel Ross, March 28th. A pool tournament will take place at 1 p.m. There will be a crawfish boil, raffles, and a 50-50 throughout the day. Plates will be $20 per plate. Raffle tickets will vary by item. The event is in celebration of Hamel's life. All proceeds will go to Courtney and Steve Ross. Support Group. Rays of Hope Children's Grief Center is a community outreach of Hospice of Midland. The center serves children and adolescents aged 4 to 18 years who have experienced a loss due to death, divorce, separation, incarceration, deployment, foster care, or other painful transition. All services are provided free of charge. For more information, call 684-5437. This column was compiled from staff reports. This article is entitled, Woman Charged with Soliciting Man to Kill Her Boyfriend. A 32-year-old woman was arrested Thursday after she reportedly attempted to hire another man to kill her boyfriend in exchange for a relationship with her. Chrissy Marie Blevins was charged with solicitation of murder, a first-degree felony. The reported solicitation happened around 3:31 p.m. February 25th in the 500 block of West 50th Street, an Odessa Police Department press release detailed. Blevins reportedly asked another man to kill her boyfriend in exchange for a relationship with her. Investigation showed that Blevins solicited the man to go to her residence to shoot her boyfriend. Blevins was transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. She has one bond totaling $75,000 and was still in custody as of Friday afternoon, jail records show. This article is entitled, Desire to Give Back, Propels O.C. Dean by Ruth Campbell. If it hadn't been for caring adults and teachers in his life, Purvis Evans wouldn't have gotten to where he is now, Dean of Liberal Arts and Education at Odessa College. Evans has had a 20-year career in education and social services. He started at O.C. January 6th. Odessa College is amazing. I admire the leadership. I think that the faculty and staff is some of the best around. I think it is a school of choice for many, Evans said. He added that he admires OC's goals. Just seeing the growth and expansion that has taken place over the last few years, I'm really excited to be a part of moving forward with that as well, he said. President Gregory Williams said Evans has a great spirit about him. He's wonderful with people. I love the experience he gained while he was in Midland, and I think he'll make us better, Williams said. Before arriving at OC, Evans was executive director of Educate Midland. He plans to be part of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin in Odessa, which has much the same mission as Educate Midland. I've also had my own business called J.M. Perrell, LLC. I was a speaker and will continue to be a speaker and singer. My children also have a few children's books we sell as part of that business, Evans said. He and his wife, Michelle, have two children, Jaden, 14, and McKinley, 9. Originally from Lubbock, Evans has lived in Midland for 16 years. He earned a bachelor's degree in general studies and a master of science degree in education and management from Texas Tech University. He also earned a master of education in counselor education from Sul Ross University in Alpine. I started out with a nonprofit organization called Learn, Inc. in Lubbock. Really, before that, I was a substitute teacher while in college, and that's what really caused me to be interested in helping students to achieve their dreams, Evans said. I was seeing a lot of disparities in education. I was witnessing some students who were in 11th grade and reading at a 5th grade level. I wanted to do something to pay it forward, because I know that there were several teachers and adults in my life that helped me get to where I am, Evans said. He added that he was a first-generation college student and came from a low-income background. No one in his family had the experience to help him get through college. So I was pretty much on my own, and if it had not been for caring adults, instructors, and advisors, I probably wouldn't have earned my college degrees. So I saw a need to give back to students who were coming from similar backgrounds, Evans said. Learn, Inc. is a nonprofit organization that works primarily with low-income and first-generation college students and helps them get ready for their first and several years after college. When I moved to Midland, I continued with a similar TRIO program here, worked with Midland ISD, worked with Child Protective Services, and again with Midland College as director of the Upward Bound program. Then I had an opportunity to work with the nonprofit organization Educate Midland, serving students from really the cradle to career and helping institutions to leverage what they were doing to serve more students, Evans said. His responsibilities as dean are basically to make sure OC brings on the most talented and impactful faculty and continue to support its existing faculty to achieve their goals of supporting students and to build top-notch programs to make sure they provide the type of courses that students need to be successful. I would narrow our goals to 4 major areas. I would say that we want to make sure that we're increasing enrollment, that we make sure that this is a school of choice for students, that we increase enrollment, retain students, make sure they are prepared to complete each semester and enter the next semester so they can meet their ultimate goal. We want to make sure that students are successful in and out of class, and we want to reduce the drop rates. We want to make sure that our students have what they will need, where they will continue in their classes and get what they need out of those courses in each semester, Evans said. He added that OC instructors and faculty do more than just teach. I think in a lot of ways they are mentors and guides, and we have to work well with our student services team, with our advisors, and our success coaches making sure that students have what they need to be successful in all areas of their lives, Evans said. Community colleges, he said, offer students more direct attention. One of the goals that we have, one of the things that our instructors want to make sure that we do, is we know our students by name very early on, and we make sure we have a connection with every student in our courses in some way, Evans said. That's a huge goal of ours, is to make sure that when a student enrolls in a class, we know you. We know what your goals are, and we help you to achieve those the best we can. Evans noted that OC does things differently than a lot of other institutions because it is so student-driven. And at the same time, we have high expectations, he said. We have a high bar. We want to make sure that we do things with excellence and that our students are prepared for excellence. He added that one of the things that excited him about OC is that it's not satisfied with the status quo. We want to make sure that the decisions that we make are based on results that are based on the needs of the community. I think when you see facilities that are needed or new programs that come up, it's a response to what the community really needs. And it's also looking ahead and being proactive rather than only being responsive, Evan said. I sense in the leadership here that they're really forward thinkers, and we want to make sure that people stay in the Permian Basin and that those that stay are prepared for the growing needs of our workforce, he added. We have a wonderful team of department chairs. Everyone is so knowledgeable and professional, well-versed in their pedagogy as well as in their areas of expertise. This is the obituary column, Saturday, March 14, 2020. Death notices. Sharon K. Brown. Odessa. Sharon K. Brown, 78, died Tuesday, March 10, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Norbert Dickman, Midland. Norbert Dickman, 77, died Wednesday, March 11, 2020, in Midland. Celebration of life will be held at 6 to 8 p.m., March 16, 2020, the Ellis Funeral Home Chapel, with a rosary recited at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland on March 17, 2020, at 10 a.m.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.